time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday from 10 to 12. Last Saturday, Kevin talked with Dillis Grant from the Sculpture on the Gulf exhibition. He caught up with Steve the Butcher and he found out some of the history of the Onitangi beach races from Dr. John Robertson. But first, Kevin talks with Fiona Gregory, the head of Waiheke High's Community Education Centre, who have just put out the program for this year's night school.
In the studio with me, I have Fiona Gregory. Welcome, Fiona.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good. And you've come in today to talk about the night school program or community education
at Waiheke High School.
That's right. And so you've recently taken over that job of looking after that. How long have you been in the job?
I've been in the job for nearly 2 weeks. So it's very exciting for me working with the community here on the island. Really looking forward to it.
Great. And what sort of courses do you run there?
We have a huge range of courses on offer. They're starting in 2 weeks in mid-February, on the 16th of February, and we have something for everyone, I think. We have language classes in Italian and Spanish, and we have classes in woodwork, sewing, art classes, organic gardening, all sorts of things. And there's also first aid certificates that people can come along and do and become credited for that. So if people need to do first aid for their work, they can come along and do a course through us.
Great. And what sort of people do you have doing these courses?
Teaching the courses?
Yeah,
there's a range, actually. Some of the people are working as teachers. For example, our new Spanish teacher is Neil Johnson, who is also the new Spanish teacher at the high school.
Right.
So there's a really nice crossover there. But other people who are tutors are really people who are just enthusiastic about their subject. You know, there's a huge array of talented people on this island who can teach and talk about all sorts of things.
Yeah. Great stuff. And what about on the other side of the coin? What sort of people generally take the courses?
Well, we're aiming the courses at adult learners. So anybody can come along, really. If you have an interest in something, you're welcome to come down and join in our courses.
Yep.
People who are complete beginners or who want to learn a few more skills. Generally, the classes have a little bit of a mix in them, and the teachers are very flexible and can help people basically meet their needs.
Great. The organic gardening class looks like a good one. Are there any that are sold out or fill up more quickly than others?
There's none that are sold out at the moment because we only put the program out yesterday.
Right, well, so they'd have to be pretty popular.
They'd have to be very popular. So you can get the program around the island. For example, you can pop into the library up at Artworks and get a program, or you can have a look on our website, which is www.waihekecomed.co.nz. That's a bit of a mouthful. So you can just Google Waiheke Night School and you end up in the same place.
Great. That sounds like an easy way of getting there.
Yeah.
Great. And so most of these courses run for 8 weeks. Is this the first term program then?
This is the first term program. So generally we run more or less with the school terms. We start a couple of weeks later.
Yep.
So the courses can run for up to 8 weeks, but some of them are a little bit shorter and they might be starting a week later. It just depends on the course.
Good. And do these courses tend to repeat? If I miss out on one now, does it mean that I'm going to miss out on it forever more and I'll always have an organic gardening shaped gap in my life, or are they likely to be offered again in the next term?
They are likely to be offered again at some stage during the year, not necessarily next term. Organic gardening's one that is a really good one to run in summer.
Yeah.
Because Simon, who runs the course, actually takes people out in the van and goes and visits a few gardens around the island.
Great,
so that's
great.
A really good hands-on course.
Good one for nosy people as well, then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the trips is out to the eco village and things like that.
Great. Well, that sounds like an interesting one. And looking forward to next term, you mentioned off-air that you were looking for tutors for people who who might want to share their knowledge.
Yes, absolutely. We're always keen to hear people's ideas for courses. So if there's a subject that you have enthusiasm for and would like to teach, then please get in touch with me on 372-6417. Now, it may be that you have some experience teaching, but if you don't have experience, that's okay too, because we can help you to upskill yourself and recommend a course on adult teaching that you could go and attend if you want to run a course.
Yep. Great. Well, it sounds like having a flick through the program, looks like lots of interesting courses there. Coming up after I play a song from Thievery Corporation, we're going to be speaking with Brent, who's going to be taking the podcasting course. Anything else you want to tell the people out there, Fiona?
Oh, we're quite excited about this podcasting course because it's a brand new course, so we're keen to get a full class for that one. The other thing I just wanted to mention is that down at Community Education, we now have Waiheke Adult Literacy with us as well. They're just moving into our premises today and we're going to be sharing with them. So there are also some adult literacy courses in our brochure as well that people can find out about. And that's quite an exciting move because it's really creating a centre of learning on Waiheke for adults. Mm-hmm. And we'd really like people to come down and tell us about their learning needs and see how we can help out with that.
Great. Well, thanks, Fiona. Fiona, the new community education coordinator on the island. If you've got any questions about night school, get in touch with Fiona through the website by googling Waiheke Night School and all will be revealed.
As you heard in that last interview, Waiheke Radio are working with the night school to put on a podcasting course. Brent Simpson talked to Kevin about podcasting, a little of its history, and more importantly, what we'll be covering in that upcoming course.
In the studio with me at the moment, I have Brent to talk about podcasting course, which is going to be run through the night school. Brent, welcome to the studio.
G'day, Kevin.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of radio work this morning.
Exactly, and you're going to be taking one of the courses at the night school.
I'm going to be teaching the course.
Yeah.
Did you say taking?
Yeah, I did, but I meant taking as in taking and supervising. I suppose it's ambiguous.
I'm going to be taking control of the...
I'm speaking to a prospective student.
Yeah.
You're going to be teaching. You're going to be at the front.
Actually, Chris Walker and myself are going to be teaching this course on podcasting. I think it's called the Waiheke Podcasting Project was what we originally were calling the course. This course was funded by, or is subsidized at least, by the Waiheke Community Board, who most graciously gave us a grant to run the course. And podcasting we love podcasting here on Waiheke Radio. If you go to our website, there's many podcasts that you can download. And what podcasts, I mean,
What's a podcast then?
Well, I mean, in their, very minimal form, a podcast is just an audio file that you put up on the internet for people to either download or stream. And it's kind of got a fancy name because it was sort of popularized around the same time as the iPods were becoming popular as well, so it's a little bit misleading in that the name is a fusion of broadcasting and iPods, but what it really is creating audio MP3s and putting them up online, and that's pretty much what we're going to be talking about in the course.
So does this mean I can listen to my favourite Waiheke radio show while I'm commuting on the boat?
That's right, you can. You can download it to a portable player or you could just listen to it on a computer. I listen to a lot of the Waiheke radio shows as podcasts at work.
Do you ever get the feeling that we're living in the future?
I thought,
Downloading radio shows and listening to them and not having millions of tapes with you. Imagine this, 20 years ago, somebody had told you that...
Well, it's true. I mean, one of the things that we are going to be we'll be talking about and introducing people to in the course is the fact that the equipment and the software required to create your own audio artifacts or your own sort of shows are freely available, and one of the, what the course will do, a large part of the course is going to be dedicated to using a piece of software that we love in the radio station called Audacity, which is an open source audio editing software. So if you are interested in how to cut up and edit audio for telling your own stories, for putting together, I don't know, journalistic style pieces, then consider coming along to the course at Waiheke, what are we calling it? Waiheke Night School. And that's basically will be a lot of what we're doing. We'll be talking about what podcasts are and sort of helping you come up with ideas on styles and listening to some podcasts as well. And then diving right into recording audio and then editing audio using an open source piece of software called Audacity. And then we'll also, towards the end of the class, explore places online where you can upload your podcast so that people can access to them. And we'll also be putting the podcast up on the waihikiradio.org.nz website, as well as creating a little show to feature all the podcasts that have come out of the course. So you'll be able to not only tell people to download them online or listen to them online, but hopefully hear yourself on the radio, and maybe we'll even find some budding DJs.
Sounds exciting.
It's good. I've done some podcasting courses, workshops in way down in the South Island, Riverton, actually, and it's surprising actually how quickly people pick up on the idea. It's not as daunting as you may feel. And one of the things that I noticed down south when we did the courses, one of the sort of types of content which works really well is that kind of heritage oral history type content. So if you are out there and you think, oh, I've got some stories that I want to tell, or I've got some people I want to record, that's another one of the sort of great aspects, is we will be have some equipment that you can take away with you in the course, so you can interview other people on the island and get some of these stories and some of these sort of heritage aspects of the island, and sort of create these audio artifacts that will stick around for a long time. That's a good use of the medium, I think.
Sounds fascinating. So if people are interested in finding out more about podcasting, they can Google podcast, perhaps have a look at the Wikipedia entry, and then if they want to take the next step and get into this course, what are the details?
Well, the course is running from March the 4th to the 1st of April. It's quite an inexpensive course to take. It's $25, so that's five classes, I think, so $5 a class. We have a limited amount of seats in that one. I think it's 10 people we're taking, so only 10 people. But we probably will offer this course again in the future if it all works out well. So just check out the Waiheke Night School website, which I think is waihikecomed.co.nz.
That's, or you Waiheke, can Google Waiheke Night School, Waiheke, which is... Yeah.
They need a better domain name than that, don't they, mate?
Yeah. Something snappy.
Something snappy, yeah. Learn Waiheke or something. But get on the website and get in touch if you're interested. And don't, the course does mention sort of basic computing skills, but, you know, I mean, basic computer skills would be sort of much turning it on and things like that. So don't let that deter you. I mean, if you really don't know much about computers, give us a call anyway. And a lot of times what we found in the other courses that have run is buddying people up works really well. So you get someone who's really good at doing the recording and good at, you know, getting interviews, and then another person who's better at the computer skills and the editing. And, you know, it's a lot of these things are collaborative efforts. So anyway, get in touch with us and have a chat. And hopefully in the coming months we'll get some podcasts on the radio from Waihikians and have people running around all over Waiheke making podcasts.
Sounds very interesting. Well, thanks, Brent, for coming in and speaking to us about the podcasting course at the Waiheke Night School. Google Waiheke Night School if you need more information about that one.
Thanks, Kevin.
A couple of weeks ago, we talked with Dillis Grant, the organiser of the Headland Sculpture on the Gulf exhibition. That was shortly before the exhibition opened. But now, in the midst of a very busy season, Dillis joins us again to talk a little about how the exhibition is going and some of its highlights.
With me in the studio, I have Dillis Grant from the Headland Sculpture on the Gulf exhibition. Good morning, Dillis.
Yeah, hi.
And the Sculpture on the Gulf exhibition, or should I call it the Headland Sculpture on the Gulf, or yep. what's... Yeah.
Whatever.
It kicked off last weekend, anniversary weekend, and it's going through for another two weeks.
Yep. Sunday the 15th, February is our last day.
Great. And how's it been going?
Good. No, we've had good numbers of people through. I mean, this weather is really helping, of course. And we seem to be getting groups and families and things through in the morning, earlier, like from 6:30, 7 in the morning. A bit quieter in the middle of the day with the heat, and then a lot through in the evening.
Great.
So you can come, you walk at any time, you know, it's open, free public walkway.
Yeah, we're having a chat about that off air, so anybody can go along basically during daylight so that they can actually see the sculptures and just get along and see some sculpture. That we're thinking about doing it next weekend. What are your predictions about which is going to be the worst day for for the crowds?
Well, because Friday's a public holiday, Waitangi Day, I'm not sure, actually. I know that for anniversary weekend we had the biggest crowds. We had nearly 2,000 people through on Sunday of anniversary weekend.
Right.
So I just think next weekend we'll be really busy. If you're local and you just want to do it quietly, I suggest you do it midweek, although schools are back this week, but either midweek or, in the evenings.
Great.
That's a really nice time. This light is really different, and it changes with all the shapes and shades on all the colours. So the pink string, for example, in the evening light looks very different to the middle of the day. And Kazu's work on the Rangitoto showcase is beautiful with the light streaming through it for sunsets and stuff like that.
So which is your favourite time of day for looking at the sculpture?
I think the evening.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's the best. Yep. Cooler and the light is just fantastic.
Great. Yep. And if you're working backwards to make sure you've got enough time to have a good look at things, what would be the best time to, well, what would be the latest you could go through and comfortably see everything in the evening?
Well, I reckon you start about 7:30, 8.
Yeah.
Because it's still, you know, maybe a bit earlier, 7. Have a good wander, and it takes you about an hour.
About an hour, right.
Yep. Yep.
And what's the terrain like? It's a little
pretty,
bit hilly out there,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it is. It's buggies and prams and stuff like that. It's a bit difficult to go up a couple of the sections of the landscape, but you have to carry the buggies down some of the steps if you want to do that and push it up a hill and stuff. But and you need good walking shoes, you know, no high heels.
Yeah.
And just in water and just all the normal sort of things for a bit of a tramp, really.
Sounds good.
An artistic tramp.
Yeah. And in terms of the pieces that you have in the exhibition, what have been some of the more popular ones or the more interesting ones?
Yep, yeah, no, the Gay Jurisic, she's an artisan from Hamilton. She's done spanning that whole first valley with this pink builder's twine,
right,
which is really, people love that.
Yeah.
And architects seem to love that. I don't know why. Must be something with distance or tension or something like that. But that's really, and as I say, when it rains, the tiny little bits of rain we've had, that changes its colour. And then in the evening, it's different colour and sensation. So that's some, and Lucy Bucknell's little meerkat soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
People really, really, really like that.
What are the meerkat soldiers?
They're little bronze soldiers who are meerkats.
What it says on the box there.
Yeah. They're playing in terms, really, these warm, fuzzy little meerkats turned into creatures of terrorism.
Right.
So that's their camouflage, so you have to watch out for those.
All right,
otherwise they'll pounce on you. They'll ambush you. So they're pretty cool. Jeff Thompson's done this extraordinary huge water tank full of flotsam and jetsam and all bits of pieces that he discovered when he was installing his work in 2007.
Yeah.
You remember that launch that burst into flames just off Cable Bay, sort of Temero Bay around there.
Yeah, the one that Graham Hart rescued.
That's the one.
Yeah.
It's a famous Waiheke legend now, isn't it? Yeah. Well, he watched it for a few days and saw all these bits and pieces and just thought how fascinating all that sort of stuff was. So he's built this amazing, huge tank full of, as an aquarium, it's got a little solar panel up the top and chugs away all day.
Yeah.
Things spin around and kids love that.
Yeah, I'll bet, and adults too.
Yeah.
Making sure they're supervising the kids very closely, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Very good. And so this is we were just speaking off air, this is your first time actually having the sculpture on the Gulf come to fruition.
Yeah.
How have you found that?
Oh, fascinating. No, it's been great. It's been nuts. It's working with these artists now for the last 6-7 months, so you get this, you know, proposal in which the selectors choose, and then you work really closely with them and bring it to fruition. And, it's a really sort of, it's a fabulous experience, because something from a piece of paper or a photoshopped thing arrives on your computer, and then suddenly it's, you see it chugging down the lane on the back of a huge truck of Waihiki freight, and you think, oh.
So that's what it looks like.
I didn't realise it was going to be, or the plane, for example, you know, that was all photoshopped. Mm. When it actually arrived, it was about 3 times as heavy, and then it was... all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, you have to be pretty flexible.
Sounds challenging.
Mm.
But
it's
rewarding.
Fantastic. Yeah, for the people, that's just great. Yeah.
Great. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks for coming in, Dillis. But
okay.
So just to recap, Headland Sculpture on the Gulf going through until the...
Sunday, 15 February.
And you can do it any time of day.
Yep.
And get along, make sure you see
bring
it.
Bring your dogs, just put them on a leash. But dogs, we got little watering bowls all along the way. And yep.
Dog friendly, child friendly.
Absolutely.
Friendly. Thanks, Dillis.
Okay, see you. Thanks very much.
Every week, Steve Hill from the Village Butchery joins us on Island Life to talk about food. This week, he talks about barbecuing large pieces of meat.
Welcome, Steve.
Good evening.
How are you?
Tired.
And sore ankle.
And sore ankle, yes.
It's no good. We're going to speak this morning about big bits of meat, and particularly cooking them on the barbecue. I sometimes do a leg of lamb and use indirect heat. Is that sort of technique you'd use?
Well, that's what we call roasting.
Yep.
In a roundabout sort of fashion.
Yeah.
If you're cooking a big piece of meat on your barbecue, you need to just lift it a little bit from the direct heat.
Yep.
On a wire rack tray.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And put a lid on it.
Yep.
Whether that's the lid on your barbecue or a plant pot or a roasting tray.
Yep.
And it's going to be there for a long while. It's not an instant sort of barbecue.
Yep.
We'll be eating this in 20 minutes.
No.
It's let's have a smell, a look.
Yep.
And come back in 2 hours.
Yeah. I think... It normally takes me about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half to do a leg of lamb, a smallish leg of lamb.
Yeah.
Is the cooking time affected much if you've got the bone in or not? Or
It takes a little bit longer with the bone in.
Yeah.
But at the end of the cooking, if you've left the bone in, it tastes a lot more special.
Yeah.
It's kind of, we can butterfly a leg of lamb.
Yeah.
And you're done in 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
If you do the whole thing with the bone in, you're looking 2 hours.
Yeah. And before you put it on the barbecue, what sorts of things should you do to it? I mean, you could marinate it, but...
You could.
Do you need to put oil on it, or
not necessarily on the barbecue, but certainly cut some pockets and stick cloves of garlic in there and rosemary, that sort of thing, and just let it do its thing.
It's
magical when it comes out.
Yeah. And do you need...
Be patient. I think that's the, you know, I don't think it's an instant thing.
Yeah. Do you need to put anything on the meat while it's cooking? Do you need to pour wine over it or anything, or is that just going to go straight off onto the?
If you're doing it on your barbecue, ideally you want to put it on a rack, so it's off the direct heat.
Yeah,
and then maybe put it in a tray.
Yeah,
and everything, all the juices that come out, just keep basting it.
Right.
With those juices.
Yeah.
So you're actually putting it back, and it just keep it nice and moist.
Yeah.
And tender. But again, be patient. It's a 2-hour job.
Yeah. And at the other end of things, once you've cooked it, how long should you let it rest before you start carving it up?
It's got to be, a good 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to let it relax from its ordeal.
It is quite an ordeal when you think about it, I suppose.
Well, yeah.
And if you don't let it rest, it's going to, all of your juices are going to come out, is it?
Well, the juices will come out anyway, but it's just going to be so tough. Tense.
Yeah.
If you give it 15 minutes before you even think about carving it up, it'll just relax a little bit and it'll just be so much better.
Yeah. Okay. And sometimes when I do that, when we do actually get around to eating the meat, it's gotten a little bit cold. Is that, what's the best way to get around that?
Well, just keep it somewhere, switch the barbecue off.
Yeah, and that's going to be enough.
And just leave it and slice it when you need it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Just keep it, doesn't have to be mad hot, but just keep it warm.
Yeah. Right, and the other thing I tried for the first time last week was doing some pork belly on the barbecue. Which seemed to go okay, but not as well as I'd hoped. Have you got any tips about doing pork belly or ribs?
There's two ways you can do that.
Yeah.
If you want the crackling,
ideally,
do it in the oven first.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whack it in a very hot oven and get your crackling, and then put it on your barbecue and basically close the lid and come back in 2 hours.
Yeah.
If I actually quite like the pork skin not crackled.
Yeah.
So put that in your barbecue, put the lid on and leave it, and it just melts all together.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, for God's sake, don't even think about trimming off the fat or whatever.
No. You've got the wrong cut of meat if you want to cut the fat off the pork belly, haven't you?
Well, people cut fat off meat anyway, and that's where people go wrong a lot of times, saying it's dry, tough.
Yeah.
If you don't want to eat the fat, cut it off before you eat it.
Yeah.
Don't cut it off before you cook it. Yeah. That is the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not into eating fat, well, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But don't ruin a very good, expensive piece of meat by cutting the fat off first.
Yep.
Because it will be dry, tasteless, and tough.
Yep.
But just let it do its thing.
Yep.
Go back a couple of thousand years. You've chased it all over the plains,
yeah,
and caught it and dragged it back to your cave. Appreciate.
Yeah. Sounds sensible. And the pork belly, what sort of heat should you use? Sort of a medium heat or something a little bit lower or higher?
If you're going to cook it long and slow, there's people bought stuff, pork bellies from me in the shop, and they've come back and said it was so good and they cooked it for 7 hours.
Right.
I don't know whether I could wait that long. But if you want the crackling, it's got to be a high heat first.
Mm-hmm. So you do that high heat first for crackling.
Yeah.
You don't try and do it afterwards.
No, because if you do it, start it slowly, the fat starts to melt, the skin starts to melt,
mm-hmm.
and that goes into the meat, and you don't get that crackling. It's got to be a fierce heat first.
How long do you need that fierce heat for?
Probably 20 minutes, 30 minutes, depending on the size of or the cut.
Yeah.
But the crackling comes first.
Yeah. Right, I'll try that next time, I think.
Do that. Score it. Malt vinegar,
mm-hmm.
and a bit of rock salt. That just helps it all. That's scientific. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
But it works.
That's the main thing. So vinegar, rock salt, and a little bit of oil on top.
No, oil?
Don't
need oil because it's...
It's got its
natural fat.
Yeah. Very good.
But just high heat to get the crackling first. Maybe 180, 200 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've got that, you've got to keep your... You know, looking at it, and see when it's ready, and then just turn it down to finish it cooking.
Good. Well, they sound like helpful hints, and hopefully my next pork belly turns out a little bit better. Maybe I'll try doing it for 7 hours, but I'm not sure that I've quite got the patience for it. But I'll crackle it first.
Do it first. If you're going to do it on your barbecue and you want the crackling,
yeah,
it's got to go in the oven first and get that serious heat.
Yeah.
And then it'll all puff up and crackle, and then you can put it on the barbecue and finish it off.
Great. Oh, well, thanks for those tips, Steve. That's Steve the Butcher, who comes across and talks to us on Island Life, brought to you by Placemakers. And thanks. We'll see you again next week.
Okay.
Okay.
Cheers, Steve. Thank you.
The Onitangi Beach Races are a long-standing Waiheke tradition. Dr. John Robertson joined us on Island Life to tell us a little bit of their history.
Welcome to the studio, John.
Thank you very much. It's a wonderful opportunity to speak about the races today.
Very good. And you've been involved with organising the beach races for how many years now?
Yes, the Rotary Club of Waiheke Island started organising the beach races in 1998, and there's been a number of members of Rotary who've been involved in that. A tremendous effort by Rotary put in on a volunteer basis to make the races work. More recently, the Rotary Club set up a little incorporated society to handle the races, and the incorporated society works in with Rotary to make a success.
Great. And how long have the beach races been running at Onitangi?
Well, they started about 100 years ago. They've been on and off over that time. Basically, they were set up so that the people of Waiheke Island got together and had a good time, community spirit, developed that. And at the same time, raise some funds for things that were going on the island. But also, there's always been a competitive element in the races. In those early years, of course, there were farms on Waiheke Island. The farmers rode horses, and they used to talk about whose horses were the fastest horses on the island and this sort of thing. And
bragging really, rights at the pub then.
That's right. That spirit is still very much part of the Onitangi Beach races, and now we've got a lot of competitive events. People can take part in everything from the fastest men and women on Waiheke Island all the way through to the beach races, the horse races. The exciting event, I think, is the Waiheke Pony Club events that have been set up. These are competitive, and it allows the young riders to compete. It's a wonderful event, but there's also things like sandcastles building and sand sculpture, and of course the newest one based on new technology, the motorboat races, which are a new item that has been very much enjoyed.
Which are the most popular ones with the spectators, do you think?
Well, I think it varies depending on the age. I mean, there's always tremendous excitement about horse races. There's nothing quite like watching a group of horses at the start line all waiting to take off on a race. It's terribly exciting, and I think that's always very, very important. People enjoy the tractor races, a bit of fun there. The sea legs, as I said before, is a new interest. But depending on who it is and the age of the person, some children just thoroughly enjoy being involved in the sandcastle event. There's a new event this year, competitive tug of war, in which teams from different organisations on Waiheke Island are getting together for a particular charity of their choice, and that's going to be of great interest on the island.
Sounds great. And the competitors for the various events at the beach races, do they tend to be people on the island or off island?
They're predominantly people on the island, but for instance, many horses come from the mainland now. There are others that come across, and generally this undertaking beach races is put on for Auckland as a whole. People come across for day, and Fuller's, of course, make a huge effort to make it work in terms of transporting people across on the boat, so that's a very important part of our operation. All the businesses on the island, many of them sponsor the beach races. That's hugely important. The aim is to provide for the people of Waiheke, but also for the people of wider Auckland on a fun day on Waiheke Island.
Great, and it's partly about having a great event which people enjoy, but also about fundraising. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yes, the Incorporated Society runs a tight ship in terms of the finances. We keep very careful records. At the end of the day, there's money available, and that's passed over to the Rotary Club, and then the Rotary Club decides during the course of the following year on how that money is going to be distributed to the community. And there's been some wonderful grants made to assist different organisations on Waiheke Island by the Waiheke Island Rotary Club.
Great. And given the fundraising aspect, how are most of the funds raised?
The funds are raised in two ways, through sponsorships from the different commercial organisations on Waiheke Island, but also through the sale of the race packs. And it's very important that people, if they're at the races, they buy their race packs, because those race packs give people an opportunity to participate in the races themselves. There's winners and losers, of course, but the excitement is whether or not you've got a winning ticket. When you open your pack and there's a race run, that's always exciting for people. But the money from those race packs goes through to charity, so we're keen to sell as many race packs as you can. Then, of course, there's a silent auction, and many companies and organisations on the island have contributed a lot of interesting things. Those are available for people to come by and put price tags on, depending on what they think they're worth. And there's silent auction at the end of the day. So that's another important fundraising aspect of the beach races.
Great. All right. And given that there are going to be quite a few people on Waiheke Beach, probably some health and safety pointers as well. What recommendations do you have, John?
Well, the beach races are run on a very tight basis in terms of health and safety. We're very conscious of issues there, and the City Council, of course, has stringent requirements in relation to the health and safety issues, so we're watching that all the time. We just ask the public to be tolerant and to be careful. Families don't allow children to be running across the beach at the time the horse races are on. That's something that we supervise carefully. But when there are big crowds, sometimes people decide to take off and do things, and we urge the public to just take care. Another aspect, too, is on the roads. A lot of cars will be out at Onatangi, and it just requires people to be considerate and not get angry if somebody's parking in a position that they don't think they should be or something like that. So we plead with people to just take care and be considerate so that the day goes off safely and there are no accidents.
Well, one last question. If you're going to go there and park, where is the best place to leave your car?
Well,
anywhere you can.
To some degree, but there is some guidance on that, and as people drive towards the beach races, there'll be wardens who will point out where to park. I should mention as well that there's a zero waste program that's operating this year, and there's a lot of volunteers that are involved in this. It's a very interesting development, but the aim is to keep the waste that accumulates during the course of the day is separate, and there'll be bins available, so please keep an eye on that and make the day a success.
Great. Well, thanks for coming in to talk to us about that, John Robertson, who is involved with the organisation of the Onatangi Beach Races. One more thing I should add is that Waiheke Radio will be broadcasting from there, and I was speaking to somebody from the station yesterday who it sounds like ambitious plans about real-time broadcasting and all sorts of things happening. So something to look out for, and hopefully people can take their transistor radios along and listen to Waiheke Radio coverage and commentary. But thanks for coming in and joining us, Dr. John Roberts, about the Onatangi Beach Races.
You've been listening to the interviews from last week's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on what Waiheke people are thinking and doing. It's brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday from 10 till 12. To download these interviews, go to our website www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Mm-hmm.